Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Happy Monday, America. Thank you so much for joining me today on Furthermore with Amanda Head. I have an incredible guest on today. She is someone who you should know her name. And if you don't already, you will know her name. She is on the election integrity beat for Just the News. And she has covered a plethora of stories, Arizona, North Carolina, Wisconsin. She stays on top of this stuff. And it is supremely important right now because obviously we have an election coming up in November. And I personally do not want to see what happened in 2020 happen again this time around. Now, some people are machine people. Some people think that the fraud happened through legislation and because of COVID, all of these laws that they passed circumventing their state legislature, which, by the way, flies in the face and defies the Constitution. But they circumvented their own state legislatures to pass laws allowing for voting during COVID so people didn't actually have to show up. They could vote early. They could drop it in a Dropbox, unsecured Dropbox. Sometimes ballot harvesting, all of that stuff. I'm one of those people who I think it all happened. I don't think that it was just one thing or another. I think that the culmination of all of it ultimately altered the results of the election. And there probably isn't anything that you could tell me for the rest of my however many years I have on this earth that would change my mind about it. I have seen too much. I have read too much. I have learned too much. I have spoken to too many people to ever think that the 2020 election was on the up and up. That's just my personal opinion. Now, Natalia Mittelstadt is John's reporter who was on the election integrity beat. And she's going to be joining me today to talk about a specific story out of Arizona. A lot of you have heard in the national news about the coordination, collusion between the Biden administration and social media companies to suppress and in some cases delete outright information. Obviously, we had those intelligence officials who signed the letter stating and attesting to the fact that the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation. And of course, that turned out to be untrue. They suppressed stories about COVID. And this is actually happening on a statewide level. You have these operations where you have Democrats, specifically in Arizona, the Maricopa County recorder and their Secretary of State coordinating with gongos, government organized non-governmental organizations, but private entities at any rate, to suppress information. And this operation is being paid for by the people of Arizona. It is unbelievable that they continue to get away with this stuff, but there are freedom fighters in the journalism world. And there are freedom fighters on the ground in Arizona who are fighting against this. So we're going to take a very quick commercial break and we're going to be back on the other side with Natalia Mittelstadt. Stick around. We'll see you in just a few minutes.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back, everybody, to Furthermore with Amanda Head. You know, as we head into the summer, of course, the presumptive GOP nominee, Donald Trump, who I imagine is going to become the official nominee this summer at the RNC convention, the conversation is going to ramp up with regards to election integrity. And if you guys don't know the name Natalia Mittelstaedt, you are going to be hearing much more about her and reading much more of her reporting. Practically anytime there is a big explosive election integrity story on justthenews.com, the byline will read Natalia Mittelstaedt. She does incredible work. This is her beat. This is her bread and butter. She knows the ins and outs of each of these situations, especially in these swing states like Arizona. And you, if you were over on justthenews.com this morning, you saw a major breaking headline by her. And I am honored to be joined by Natalia. Welcome. Welcome to the first time to my podcast.
Thanks, Amanda. Thanks for having me on.
I am so happy to have you. Okay, so I want to send everybody over to Just the News. The headline is Arizona Secretary of State Maricopa County Censor Election Information, and then a quote from them, First Amendment is, quote, thorn. So talk to us about, just give us like a 60-second preview of what we're going to be learning from you today.
Yeah, so essentially, both the Maricopa County Recorder's Office and the Arizona Secretary of State have for several years now kind of worked together, not only on the government side, but also with nonprofits and social media companies with regard to kind of censoring election information or what they think is mis, dis, and malinformation. And basically they're saying, oh, there's all these rumors going on social media, so we have to like clamp down on them. And in doing so, they have, especially the Recorder's Office has noted kind of their, in some sense, disdain for what the First Amendment protects with regard to freedom of speech.
Ugh, this is so gross. And I feel like this, you know, we've been hearing about the coordination between Joe Biden and his administration and social media companies. And I think that for a lot of people, you know, watching what was happening with Biden v. Missouri, and then, you know, that ultimately turned into the Murthy case. And so people thought that this was kind of, you know, on its way to being out of the problem, you know, not being an issue for us anymore. But this is happening at on a state level. So what was the precursor for this? Because I know for you and the other gal who wrote with you on this, Charlotte Hazard, who I had on the podcast on Friday, I know for you guys, there have got to be these little tentacles that lead to a story like this, obtaining the documents, reaching out for interviews. Talk to us about what that was.
Yeah. So Charlotte has great connections in Arizona. And basically through those, we were brought this these public records from both Maricopa County and the Arizona Secretary of State's office. And the people who got them were like, well, if you put this together, it seems like there's a larger censorship narrative here. So we dug into it. And that's kind of how it started.
So I know at least at the beginning, the Gavel Project, which I think started back in 2021 by this attorney, Ryan Heath, that he had originally started this to combat COVID policies and, you know, woke targeting of kids. And now he has moved into this space of election integrity. What part did they play in the development of this story?
They obtained the public records themselves. They asked for those on behalf of someone they were working with. And so, that's how they basically were part of this whole thing.
So they brought these documents to you and said...
Through another person, yeah.
Yeah, and said, okay, this is what we have found. We're very concerned about this. Can you shed light on it? As you are reading through these documents, you and Charlotte, what were some of the most concerning elements of it?
There's a lot, and there's a lot more to come, actually. This is kind of the tip of the iceberg, I'd say. But some of the things.
And feel free to use your notes, because I know that this is a big story and there are a lot of components to it.
Thank you. Appreciate it. There's a good bit. One of it, I guess, the piece that seems like kind of started this whole thing was an email from 2019 between Facebook and the Arizona Secretary of State's office, which at the time was Katie Hobbs before she became governor. And the social media company was telling Arizona that they had heard from election officials that there should be tools to track potential voter interference content on Facebook. And so Facebook was working on that and reaching out to the Secretary of State's office about it. And basically, the Secretary of State's office responded saying, "Oh, wow, like this is great news that we'd like to share this with our county partners if we could." So that seems to be kind of where it started in the year before the 2020 presidential election.
I see. Okay. So this, there's a bit of confusion for me because I know obviously that now governor, former Secretary of State, Katie Hobbs, is a Democrat. The current Secretary of State is a Republican, right? It's Michelle Reagan.
The current Secretary of State is Adrian Fontes. He's a Democrat.
Adrian Fontes. Yeah. So you've been, have you been blockaded by both that office and the Maricopa County Recorder?
Well, the Maricopa County Recorder at least responded to our questions for the story, whereas the Secretary of State and the governor completely ignored them. So it seemed like Maricopa County was a little bit more concerned about their reputation.
Yeah. I guess for Katie Hobbs, it's a little bit more about self-preservation. Okay, so let's start at the heart of this with respect to the social media, because obviously nowadays everybody's on social media. It seems like that's how so much of our news comes into us. It's not necessarily going directly to justthenews.com or whatever the case may be. It's because of these articles being tweeted out. So their concern was that people on social media were raising concerns about election integrity, or that they were passing on information that obviously didn't comport with their narrative. What were these posts about?
Yeah, well, exactly. In the Facebook email, they don't go into detail as to what they were looking at, but we have seen before with the Secretary of State's office specifically, that they did go through these nonprofits that coordinate with social media companies to take down and report posts. And so one of the ones we saw was with regard to the Sharpiegate ordeal during 2020, where people were saying, "Oh, if you use Sharpies, then the ballots won't be able to be read correctly." And so we saw that with regard to these records that basically, the Secretary of State's office was working with these nonprofits that contacted the social media companies and were like, "Okay, can we do something about these posts?" And basically, the nonprofits reached out to those companies and they got some action from some of them and not from others. So they said that Facebook and YouTube hadn't done anything, but TikTok had taken down larger videos that these nonprofits had flagged on behalf of the Secretary of State's office.
Okay, now you mentioned Sharpiegate, and I remember in the months following the 2020 election, a lot of people raised concern about that. And then there were folks who came out and said, no, this is a total hoax. This had nothing to do with the ultimate outcome of the election. What's the true story on that?
Well, since all that, they have continued to say you can still use Sharpies. So
okay,
it appears that that is, fine to use. So that could have been something that was, misunderstood or not.
Yeah.
Again, some of these things are a little tricky because you're not quite sure what's totally accurate.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I believe that they still do use them and that they're fine to use.
Okay.
They've been saying, yeah.
As far as whatever financial output has to be done to conduct the censorship, and maybe the financing is built in because of their governmental positions, but it kind of seems to me like the taxpayers of Arizona are ultimately paying to be censored themselves.
Yep. Yeah, that's one of the biggest issues here is that, not only Maricopa County residents with the recorder's office, but then, of course, statewide, you have residents who are paying their taxes that are going to these elected officials in their offices to basically censor free speech, which is, entirely against the First Amendment. So that's something that's really interesting looking at this. It's like, okay, like you have, like, for example, the recorder's office had expanded their communications department in order to focus on this malinformation and even.
So taking more taxpayer money.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, okay, let's hire more people. Let's focus on this more. I know there's a transcript from a Judiciary Committee hearing from the House of Representatives where one of the people with regard to these kind of election misinformation nonprofits said that, yeah, Stephen Richter was like, yeah, my day job is focusing on misinformation and my night job is working on elections.
Oh, my heavens.
A little backwards compared to.
Yeah, Stephen Richter, by the way, guys, not Stephen Richards, who is a reporter for justthenews.com and often shares a byline with John Sullivan, two very different people. And I want to talk about Stephen Richter in just a moment and some of the stuff that he is saying in these speeches on college campuses. But I want to ask you about the building a partnership of election fact ambassadors. Fact ambassadors, if there was, I don't think that there is a more Orwellian term out there today, fact ambassadors. Tell us about this document.
Yeah. So basically this, according to Maricopa County, this was a draft document that they never implemented. Mm-hmm. And they said that about another document as well. But so with the election fact ambassadors, the Maricopa County Recorder's Office, so they would partner with influencers in their community and across the country who share their desire to spread accurate information about elections and combat disinformation. So basically people who agree with them, who will put out their narrative on elections and what is going on. And it seems like this was probably created for the 2022 midterm elections based on content in the document. But basically they were going to have the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors Chairman, Bill Gates, to send out like a daily email in the week up to election day saying, okay, this is the election topic we're focusing on today, the facts and our links and all that, so that the public can be educated on the election information coming from the office.
So I know, first of all, them saying that it's a draft document and that it was never used, I think I've heard that story before. Mm-hmm. Do you know if any social media influencers anywhere, but obviously in Arizona, posted using any of the content contained within this document?
We don't know that at this point. That would be something we'd have to see if we could track down. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they actually did get anywhere with that. That would be something to look at from the October, November 2022 timeline, I would assume. Yeah.
Okay. And I want to shift focus to what I think is basically exploitation of young people through what they are doing, because Stephen Richter, who, for those out there who don't know, he's the Maricopa County Recorder, and he was out there on college campuses giving speeches. And Natalia, one of the quotes that you put in this article, he said, quote, "I posit that the gravest threat to voting rights in our elected form of government is no longer the systematic disenfranchisement of a particular class of people, but instead the undermining of the entire election system through lies and disinformation. And it is in this respect that the Constitution today is in some ways a thorn in the side of my office, specifically the First Amendment." Natalia, this guy is in office in Arizona. And I mean, this quote here is just dripping with disdain for the people who he is supposed to represent and their free speech.
Yeah. And it was also funny because going to Maricopa County and asking about that, it's like, okay, does he still stand by this speech? And they're like, yes, he does, especially where he says he's a huge fan of the Constitution. And when you look at that part of the speech, he said, despite what I'm going to later say, I'm a huge fan of the Constitution. And he even brags about how him and his wife took their wedding vows on the Constitution. And it's kind of like, okay, that's what you claim to believe. And how can you pick and choose when you like the First Amendment, when you don't, and when it should be applied? And not only does he say that, but he also mentions, he kind of goes into different concerns about the elections that happened in 2020 and stuff like that. And he's, complaining about some of the narratives out there and said that the First Amendment ensures that we basically can't touch these idiots.
Oh, and my gosh.
Yeah, he literally calls people who believe what, you know, he thinks is election lies or disinformation idiots. And says that's especially true for him being a public official. And he goes into saying that basically, you know, he thought that with free speech, you know, with the court of public opinion, truth would always win. But he said in today's world of social media, bogus news sites, and the increasing segmentation of society, I'm not so sure. And then he complains that about 30% of Arizonans believe that the 2020 election was stolen. And he said that in his mind, that that was the biggest threat to elections and democracy.
Unreal. I don't understand how you can, first of all, taking your wedding vows on the Constitution, overcompensating much.
Yeah.
How you can be a huge fan of the Constitution and yet say that the first item in our Bill of Rights, arguably the most important, is a thorn in your side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pretty disgusting. Okay, so is this still happening, by the way? Are they still doing this?
Doing which specifically? The
censorship, the coordination, the speeches.
Yeah. So, well, the speech, not sure how many or if he's done more. That one appeared to have occurred in September 2021. So it was several months after he started his term in office, which right. he's up for re-election this mm-hmm. year, actually. And but when I did ask them about whether or not they were still working with the Arizona Secretary of State's office and all of that about this, they were saying that where is the exact quote I'm going to get here? Let's see. Monitor. Yeah. So they said that they are still working with basically the nonprofits, the Arizona Secretary of State's office, and social media companies wow. to the way they word it is to protect staff, voters, and critical election infrastructure, and to help ensure constituents have access to accurate information.
Oh, my stars. Who are the nonprofits, by the way?
So we have the Center for Internet Security and the Election Integrity Project. Both of those have come up before with regard
to... Oh, so CISA.
CISA is another... So CISA is not a nonprofit. It's part of the DHS.
Right, it's government.
So there's... Yeah, so there's CISA, which is separate from the Center for Internet Security, which... because that's a nonprofit,
yeah.
and then there's the Election Integrity Project, but they all work together.
Right.
And the recorder's office is like, yep, we still work with them for what they say is, you know, protecting their staff and voters and getting out accurate
information. I would posit that they are, what do they call them, GONGOs, government-organized, non-governmental organizations?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, there seem to be a lot of those. Okay, so as far as next steps on this story, first of all, so if Stephen Richer is up for re-election this year, it seems to me like that's a name that conservatives in Arizona need to be passing around and watching out for and getting out the vote for whoever is running against him. But what are the next steps for you in this story?
So there are some more documents that we're going to be going through, specifically how Secretary of State's office may have crossed lines when it comes to separation of powers with regard to censoring election information, and diving more into how they've kind of worked with social, or actually worked with news outlets to put out the information that they say is accurate, and you know, downplaying what they claim is misinformation or censoring it altogether. So mm-hmm. yeah, it'll be interesting to dive into that a bit more and
yeah.
get that out there.
When is Adrian, do we know when Adrian Fontes is up for re-election again?
So he just got into office after the 2022 election.
Right.
So he probably has till 2026. Yeah.
Right. A 4-year term. Okay. And I know that election integrity, I mean, this is your beat and you hit on these stories all the time. What's on your radar?
Well, besides this, also looking at several states that are led by Republicans that are looking to, or that are actually just straight up banning the Biden DOJ election monitors. Because the DOJ had announced back in 2022, it would send election monitors to certain jurisdictions across the country. And states are saying, yeah, we're not going to let them do that this year. So
Okay.
I'm working on that.
And before I let you go, I just want to ask you, because you've covered so many of these election integrity cases across, you know, swing states are what we are focusing on, because we know there are states out there that are either solidly red or solidly blue. But when you consider, you know, Michigan, Arizona, Georgia, some people consider North Carolina, Nevada, Wisconsin, all these states that unfortunately were hotbeds of election issues in not only 2020, but also 2022. From your perspective as a journalist, a neutral perspective, a non-biased eye, with respect to the election integrity issues we had in 2020 compared to now, what percentage of those issues, whether it was the Zuckerberg private funding type stuff, whether it's the early voting and ballot harvesting, from your perspective, what percentage of it has actually been remedied and is no longer something we need to worry about?
Well, I'd say it's harder to say that a lot has been done in the swing states just because a lot of them have divided government.
Right.
Or at least, you know, run by Democratic governors. So it's a lot harder for those states to get through any election integrity legislation. In some cases, we've had, like you've seen in Wisconsin, for example, that they tried to get Zuckerberg's ban through the legislature, I believe, like twice, and the governor vetoed it. And so then what they ended up doing was having a ballot measure where the voters could decide and add it to the Constitution. And that's what they did. The voters were like, no, we don't want Zuckerberg in our elections. So that was very, you know, promising.
And there were two measures that pertained to that, right? On that ballot, and they struck down both of them.
Yeah. Well, they actually accepted both to add to the Constitution to prevent it. Yep.
Right.
So that was definitely good. And then we've also seen some other things with like courts, for example, in Pennsylvania, with the dating of absentee ballots. The court said, no, you have to like date the ballots in order for them to count in the election. So it's kind of a combination of, you know, what the legislatures are able to get through, what the courts are deciding, and what ballot measures are passing. And so I still think that those swing states have a long ways to go with regard to most of these, but there are some places where they're making headway.
Yeah. You know, I'm a little bit more optimistic compared to this time last year, now that there's new leadership at the RNC, and it seems like they are raising money to actually accomplish some of these things that you've been talking about and some of these things that you have been raising alarms about. So Natalia, tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, sure. So on X, I'm at Natalia B, M-I-T-T-E-L. Also the same on Truth Social as well.
Awesome. Natalia, you are doing such an incredible job. Everybody, I'm telling you, you need to pay attention to her and her reporting, because it's where you will find the truth. And like you just heard from her answer, she's not going to be Pollyannish about stuff. She's going to give us the straight truth about it. And Natalia, that's why you were hired at Just the News. And that's why you are so valued by John Solomon and that whole team. So we appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it being on.
All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be back with more after these messages. Welcome back, everybody, to Furthermore with Amanda Head. If you have been listening to my podcast over the last 3 weeks, then you probably know the program by now. I like to have a guest or two. And then in this last segment, I just want to kind of wrap up with some stories of the day. And this being Monday, there were a few stories that popped over the weekend that I want to get into. But I'm going to start with the news that was all over mainstream news this morning. And it was pretty glorious to see. I'm not going to lie. I typically don't like to engage in schadenfreude, because I feel like anytime I laugh at someone who is enduring pain and agony, it's probably going to get turned back around on me at some point. So I typically like to tread very lightly, but seeing the meltdown on particularly CNN and MSDNC this morning was pretty spectacular. So what am I talking about? I am talking about this CNN poll that even with a margin of error of plus or minus 3.8 points, I believe it was, President Trump is, let's just say he's doing all right. So let's start this. So this was a CNN SSRS poll conducted between April 18th and April 23rd. So just about a week ago. And yes, the margin of error was plus or minus 3.8%. So let's talk about the overall issue of the choice for president. Obviously, this is not necessarily a generic ballot question, but in most instances, it might as well be, unless you have one of these other party outliers. So the choice for president in this poll, if it was down to Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, this is big, guys, 49% for Donald Trump versus 43% for Joe Biden. That's 6 points. That is 2.2 points outside of the margin of error. Now, the margin of fraud, as you all have heard me talk about, is a different story. But it seems like with respect to some of the election integrity efforts, like what I was talking about with Natalia Mittelstadt earlier in the podcast, she's very honest. She is not Pollyannish about any of what is happening this year with respect to what we have done to fix elections to make sure that they are integrous and that they are solid. But now that we have Michael Whatley as the chairman of the RNC and Laura Trump as the co-chair, I am much more confident these days that things, if they haven't made enough of an improvement by now, that they will make a significant improvement by the time the election rolls around. And, you know, for those of you out there who, and I'm going to talk about this in a moment with the polling, you look at the numbers now with respect to President Trump versus Joe Biden compared to 2020, and even these people who voted for Joe Biden in 2020 are falling off. They are falling off for Joe Biden. But as I have said before, there's a big difference between someone who doesn't really care this time around because they have figured out that Joe Biden was worse than Orange Man Bad in the White House in 2020. And now they're just not going to show up. They don't care enough to show up for Donald Trump, which, frankly, I don't know how you can't care enough considering how bad things are. But there are a lot of those people out there. So how do you turn a disenchanted 2020 Biden voter from being a no-show to a Trump voter? Well, ballot harvesting, ballot chasing, early voting, all of the things that Michael Whatley and Laura Trump are trying to do at the RNC to bring out these low propensity voters. Again, I will say, I am a purist. I am an election day voter. I am a traditionalist. I love showing up on election day, filling out that ballot, getting my sticker. I love it too. But the early voting, that's not for folks like me and you who like to do it on election day. That's not for the election purists. It is for the folks out there who voted for Joe Biden in 2020, or maybe they didn't vote for anybody in 2020. And because of their life responsibilities, their job, their kids, whatever the case may be, they typically, you know, they plan to show up on election day, but the day comes and they just can't swing it. That's what early voting is for. That's what ballot chasing and ballot harvesting is for in the states where it's legal. And that's where it's going to make a difference in the 2024 election, continuing on with these poll results. So as I said, when it's down to two people, Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, Trump has a 6-point lead over Joe Biden. When you add RFK Jr. into the mix, I can't remember how many states he's up to with respect to being on the ballot, but it cuts into Joe Biden tremendously more than it cuts into Donald Trump. Here are the numbers. Donald Trump at 42%, Biden at 33%. That's a 9-point differential. RFK at 16%. RFK doesn't have a chance. RFK is just the spoiler. We initially thought that maybe he was a spoiler for Donald Trump. Turns out that is definitely not the case. All right. In the opinion of the presidency, when it comes to success versus failure, in folks' opinion of their presidency as far as a success, 55% thought that Donald Trump's presidency was a success. Only 39% of the respondents think that Joe Biden's presidency is a success. I honestly am terrified of this 39% of people who think that this is a successful presidency. I think these folks obviously live in a bubble. They're not paying attention. They're not talking to their friends and neighbors. Or maybe they just shut it all out. I don't know. With respect to the presidency being a failure, 61% think that Joe Biden's presidency is a failure. 44% think that Donald Trump's presidency was a failure. Again, the 44% of people who think that Donald Trump's presidency was a failure, now that we have all of these conflicts over the globe because of Joe Biden's feckless and weakness on the foreign policy front, our economy is failing. Our southern border is an absolute disaster. Crime in practically every city across America, red, blue, or pink or purple, doesn't matter. These are issues that have cropped up under Joe Biden. So again, I don't understand how these people can think that things are going well. But anyway, with respect to women, this is a major thing. Donald Trump, 46, Joe Biden, 45. Everybody tells you that when it comes to women, it's hard for Donald Trump to break through because they don't like his mean tweets and they think that he's brash and they think he's a womanizer. Well, according to this poll, a CNN poll, that ain't the stuff. That ain't the stuff. Donald Trump has 1 point. Again, this is within the margin of error. But I think that it says something for sure that women who are, you know, keeping an eye on the family finances, they're paying attention to what their kids are learning in school. They pay attention to their local crime reports around them. They're starting to pay attention. Not starting. I don't want to say that these women have never paid attention, but things are hitting them differently than they used to. With 18 to 34, so young voters, 51% for Donald Trump and 40% for Joe Biden. Holy smokes, Donald Trump is winning with the youth by 11 points in this poll. With independents, Donald Trump is at 47%, Joe Biden is at 38%. That 9-point differential matters because these independent voters will ultimately be the ones to swing the election. Current economy versus the Trump economy. Voters in Michigan think that Donald Trump had the better economy, over 38% for Joe Biden. In Pennsylvania, 61% of voters think that Trump had the best economy, over 38% for Joe Biden. In Wisconsin, 62% better economy for Donald Trump than 42% for Joe Biden. These numbers matter. Look, again, I hate to use the same term over and over again. I'm not Pollyannish about these polls. We all know that there are certain times in the election cycle where polls reflect the sentiment of voters, and there are some times when polls are meant to sway the sentiment of voters. At this point in the cycle, I think that this is possibly reflecting the sentiment. I don't think it's meant to sway, but that's going to change. And that's why you can never rely on polls for any type of accurate temperature of what's going to happen. I will tell you this, and I know this on good authority, the Biden campaign is not expecting a blowout. They are not expecting that. They are preparing for this to be close. And you best bet that the RNC, Republicans on the national level and state and local level, y'all better be ready too. All right, moving on to something cultural. I gotta say, 23 years later, since I was blasting Afro Man on my car speakers via the little, you guys remember when you had the cassette tape that had the cord attached to it that you would pop into your cassette deck in your car. And that's how you would play your first or second or third generation iPod. I remember those days, and I'm pretty sure that's what I was using. Maybe I was even still using a CD. This was 2000, 2001, when Afro Man had his two major hits, Because I Got High and Colt 45 and Two Zigzags, which you could never make today because holy smokes, I felt... when I was singing the lyrics here at home, I was like, wow, if any liberal is listening to me singing these lyrics, I would be canceled for the rest of my life, as would my future children, my grandchildren, and probably about six generations out. But it's a hilarious song. You should go and listen to it. I'm not endorsing the sentiment of it. Actually, I kind of am because it's really funny. And I think the humor should be outside of the realm of cancel culture. Anyway, so Afro Man is back on my playlist. Didn't think this was going to happen, but he's a Grammy nominee. For those of you who don't know, he was born in Los Angeles. He grew up in Mississippi. He's definitely got a Southern swag to him, but he's also kind of got that West Coast thing going on for him. And he's got a new song out called Hunter Got High. Of course, it is to the tune of Because I Got High. And the lyrics are quite hilarious. The first verse is, he was going to get his laptop fixed, but Hunter got high. He wasn't going to show all of them blank pics, But Hunter got high. Many of you have seen the censored versions of the Hunter nude pics. So that's what he's alluding to there. He should have let Hillary bleach the whole hard drive. But Hunter got high. Hunter got high. Hunter got high. He wasn't going to mess with the hose, but Hunter got high. He was going to take them all out on a boat, but Hunter got high. He's the smartest man Joe's ever knew in his life. Till Hunter got high, Hunter got high, Hunter got high. So you get the picture. It's quite hilarious. And it is the same tune to the song that we all know and love, Because I Got High. So it's very easy to sing. I did not know this, but Afro Man in 2022 declared himself for the presidency. Did you know this? Oh, yes, he did. You go to his website, Afro Man for President, and he has Afro Man's 8 priorities: decriminalizing cannabis. Whatever. You guys know how I feel about pot. I think it stinks and whatever. Anyway, criminal justice reform, law enforcement reform. Now, under law enforcement reform, mandatory body cameras for every law enforcement officer will be required. I thought that we had arrived at this already after the outrage over Breonna Taylor, that that body cams were going to be required. But you all have seen the story about this ATF incident that took place in Arkansas, basically a bust gone bad with Brian Malinowski, and the ATF agents shot and killed him. No body camera footage. It was a no-knock warrant, which according to liberals is a no-no, but it's in Arkansas. So they, I guess, assume he's a Republican and they're all of a sudden fine with it. Anyway, so law enforcement reform is number 3 on his agenda. Halt of all foreign aid. Yeah, fine. Reparations, unity, love, and peace. Number 7 is more sports celebrations. When elected, Afro Man intends to promote celebratory displays in professional sports through tax incentives for favorable rules. We all want to see it. Who doesn't love a dance in the end zone or an NBA player hanging on the rim for at least 10 seconds? Don't know why that's a part of a presidential agenda, but it's Afro Man. And then the number 8 thing on his list is legalization of prostitution, which I don't know. It's a cancer on society, but whatever. Here's what's interesting to me. So when you consider Cornel West running for president, we now have 2 bearded black men with afros running for the presidency. And I'm not totally convinced that they are 2 separate people. I'm just kidding. I'm not trying to spread a conspiracy, but it is interesting. Cornel West, of course, the possible Democrat spoiler who originally announced his candidacy as a third party candidate, then moved over to Green Party. And I believe he has arrived as an independent candidate. I think that's where he is now. All right. One more topic for, oh, by the way, over on Afro Man's website, you can click on campaign apparel. And he has apparel out there that says 2020 Fro. Obviously for Afro Man and his afro with pot leaves on it, Afro Man for President. And then another one that says, I was gonna vote for Trump, but then I got high. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So moving on to our final topic of the day, some of you might have seen on social media yesterday morning, reportedly Donald Trump met with Ron DeSantis somewhere in Miami. I'm not sure exactly where it took place, but according to some reports, the meeting was held to apparently, hopefully, have the Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, bring in some of his donor base over to the Trump camp. Now, Donald Trump already has a huge amount of funding from even from former Ron DeSantis donors, but he's got more than $100 million more in campaign contributions apparently than the Trump team. So we're going to try to, I guess the Trump team is going to try to pull some of those in. A lot of people were wondering if this meeting was having to do with Ron DeSantis being the VP candidate. I would love to hear y'all's opinion on this. I frankly am fine with it because I don't think that the VP person on the ticket is going to really, I don't think it will hurt Trump regardless. If you're a Trump voter, and he puts Ron DeSantis as number 2 on the ticket, are you really going to not vote for Trump? Of course not. I don't know a single person who is a Donald Trump supporter who is going to not vote for him if Ron DeSantis is the VP on the ticket. However, there could be a net positive effect where you have some Ron DeSantis voters out there who still have amorous feelings for him and the possibility of him being in the White House, who would be willing to accept him not necessarily being in the White House living there, but hanging out there as vice president. I personally would be totally fine with going back to the original plan, which was Donald Trump with Ron DeSantis as VP, but I am very interested to hear your thoughts. So let's wrap things up today. If you want to tell me what you think about Ron DeSantis being the VP person on the ticket with Donald Trump, find me on social media. You can find me practically anywhere at Amanda Head on Instagram. It's technically the Hollywood Conservative, but if you search for Amanda Head, you'll find me there too. But on Twitter, X, Getter, True Social, it's all at Amanda Head. And then the podcast on X is at Furthermore Pod. So at me. Let me know what you think. And that's it for today. Remember to tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for a new episode. We're going to have an explosive episode on Wednesday. I'm very excited about our guest. And that's all the teaser I'm going to give you. But go listen over on Apple, on Spotify, anywhere you find your podcast. Furthermore with Amanda Head. Thanks so much for joining me today, and I'll see you on Wednesday.